Welcome to this episode of My Journey as a Physicist. Each episode features an interview with a physicist to learn about their work, their interests outside of physics, and their professional journey of how they ended up where they are today. Season 3 features physicists involved in the long-range plan for nuclear science. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Welcome, Rebecca Sermon. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, sure. I just want to say before I start that thank you for having me on this podcast. I think it's a fantastic initiative, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be part of it. So I'm currently a professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Notre Dame. I'm a theoretical nuclear astrophysicist, which means I model and study the formation of elements in stars, stellar explosions, and collisions. I have somewhat an unusual career path for a scientist in my position because after receiving my PhD, instead of moving directly into a postdoctoral position, as is typical for theorists that are looking to stay in academia, I decided to accept a visiting assistant professor position at a small undergraduate-only liberal arts college. And I was on the faculty at Union College in Schenectady, New York for 15 years before moving into my current position. As you might imagine, there are multiple challenges I face as a result of this path, but which I'm happy to discuss a little later on. But first, I really am looking forward to discussing the science that I'm working on.
All right, great. Then can you tell us a little bit more about your research then?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I'm focused on understanding the astrophysical origins of the heaviest elements like uranium and thorium. A bit of background. So elements of the periodic table, like up to iron, can be formed by fusing light nuclei into heavier ones, primarily in the interior of stars. But elements heavier than iron are not formed that way. They're formed primarily by neutron capture processes, in which sequences of neutron capture and beta decay build up to heavier and heavier species of the nuclear chart. Forming uranium and thorium, they're at the top of the nuclear chart, some of the heaviest elements, and they require the most extreme neutron capture process, which is the R process of nucleosynthesis. Here, neutrons are captured so rapidly that exotic neutron-rich species are created, species so neutron-rich that we haven't yet observed them in the laboratory. We are also not entirely sure where in the universe the R process takes place, though it's probably some extreme environment like neutron star mergers or unusual types of supernovae, and the exact conditions where this synthesis happens are uncertain. So my research strives to make progress on these questions by exploiting the connection between the nuclear properties of these very exotic neutron-rich species that participate in the R process and the astrophysical observables of the element synthesis. It's a really exciting time to be working in this field, given the recent explosion of interest in multi-messenger astronomy, the combination of seeing gravitational waves from LIGO, Virgo, and other gravitational wave detectors, and electromagnetic signatures in optical and UV and other bands. There are also key recent advancements in astronomical surveys of old stars that give us detailed abundance information on our process elements. And there's also the facility for rare isotope beams that has just come online at Michigan State, and it promises to measure properties of key neutron-rich species for the first time. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I worked with some nuclear structure theory in undergrad, so
oh, nice.
It definitely speaks to me. Yeah, can you tell us what a typical day is like with your job in between research and if you do teaching or anything like that?
Oh, yes. There is no typical day, which is part of what makes it exciting to be in academia. So let me just give you a sense of the things that I'm involved with right now. So I'm teaching introductory physics to Notre Dame first year physics majors, which is totally awesome. They are really great and fun. I'm also advising three fantastic graduate students in various stages of their PhD research. I am participating in several national research collaborations that are in various stages. Some of them are in proposal stage to more mature collaborations that we're performing the proposed work and writing articles for publication. I also perform a lot of service. I am the chair of our departmental committee on diversity and inclusion, and I perform national service as a member of the Institute of Nuclear Theory National Advisory Committee, the APS Ethics Committee, and of course, as is relevant to this podcast, I'm one of four conveners of the NSAC Long Range Plan Town Hall Meeting for Nuclear Structure Reactions and Astrophysics. So a typical day for me is just trying to keep all of these balls in the air.
Yeah, that sounds exciting and busy.
Yes, it's quite fun.
Could you explain a little bit about your roles on the Long Range Planning Committee?
Yeah. So the Long Range Plan for Nuclear Science is a pretty big deal. It's a national exercise of crucial importance for our field. In developing the Long Range Plan, we are coming together as a community in three town hall meetings in which we are working to enumerate the progress in our various subfields since the last Long Range Plan. We discuss the most compelling scientific questions that we can make progress on in the next decade. And then we chart a recommended path forward. The major national funding agencies, the National Science Foundation, the Department of Energy, they use the Long Range Plan of Nuclear Science to define funding priorities. So it's really of crucial importance. So my role is as one of four conveners to the town hall meeting for nuclear structure reactions and astrophysics. Our job there is to actually organize the meeting. The meeting itself is going to take place over 3 days. The first day consists of plenary talks given by leaders in the field that provide overviews of topics like nuclear astrophysics to cross-cutting areas like computing, education, and diversity. The second day is made up of working group sessions where input from the broad community is welcomed and discussed. Then this input is distilled into several resolutions that will be put forward to NSAC for consideration. And then after the meeting, we will organize all of this input into a white paper that will be submitted to NSAC for inclusion in the long range plan itself. So the conveners, again, are organizing the program. We invited the speakers, we organized the working groups, and we're going to draft the resolutions from the meeting, and then we'll organize the final white paper. So it's a big job. Pleased to have the opportunity to work on it.
You may have already said this, but could you remind me which town hall you are a part of?
Yeah, so this is the Nuclear Structure Reactions and Astrophysics. The hot and cold QCD town hall has already happened in September, and then there will be a third town hall on fundamental symmetries and neutrinos, which will take place in December, and ours takes place in November.
Could you maybe give me a sneak peek on, you kind of discussed the more general idea of what the town hall is, maybe a sneak peek on the specifics of what's happening as of recording next week, but will probably be out by the time this
Yeah, it will
podcast
be out all
comes
at all times. Yes, that's right. A big scientific emphasis in this town hall is capitalizing on recently built facilities. So we have the facility for rare isotope beams that has been constructed at Michigan State, and it is under operation, and we're looking forward to all of their exciting results. So we need to be making sure that FRIB is supported and that the equipment that we need to make the most out of the science at FRIB is also supported. The low energy nuclear physics community also operates a network of smaller accelerator labs. These are the Aruna labs. These are crucial for both different types of science than radioactive beam science and are key for workforce development as well. And then there is the Atlas facility at Argonne National Lab. So these are the major facilities that we want to make sure that we have the support and encouragement for.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I like to hear that. Yeah, you said you were on some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion committees, and I know that's a part of these town halls and will be a part of the white paper. Are there any specifics about that that you want to talk about?
Yeah, we have cross-cutting areas mandated under this particular long-range plan. And two of these are there's one on education and workforce development, and then there's another on diversity and inclusion. These are crucial pieces. We have working groups talking about these topics. We'll have plenary talks as well that will address these issues. And the DOE and NSF have been very open to these initiatives and are already funding. Yeah, so for example, the DOE has just added as a part of their proposal process to, I mean, the NSF for a long time has had a broader impacts component to their proposal process, and the DOE is adding workforce development and diversity inclusion topics to their proposal process as well, so which I think we welcome as a community.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's something very
Yeah.
important in physics today and everywhere else too.
Yeah, another important initiative that predates the town hall but is will certainly be highlighted at the town hall is our DNP Allies program. So this is a group that has organized and operated at the DNP fall meetings for the past several years. And it has just encouraged an environment where everyone, every participant feels comfortable and free to participate scientifically to the best of their abilities.
Another question I wanted to ask you is related to these town halls and getting input from the broader community. So can undergrads just come to this and or grad students, students of whatever, and have their input heard?
They are definitely welcome. We have organized the town hall to have on-site participation, but also fully hybrid. So anybody who wants to can join and listen in and make their voice heard. And again, this is supposed to be a whole community exercise, and graduate students and even undergraduate students are really important parts of our community.
Do you usually see a lot of, this does only happen every once in a while, but do you usually see a lot of interaction with the students, or is this something that we need to spread the word about more?
Well, the thing is, we kind of also want to, I think we kind of protect our students from this process a little bit, because it is, it's kind of the opportunity for the senior people in the field to lay a foundation that the next generation can take advantage of. So we don't want to give the burden of that work to young people. That said, we of course want to hear from them. We're just not going to make them write the white paper.
Yeah, no, that's definitely interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, even being in graduate student organizations, I feel like it's a lot of work, and things that people higher up could be taken care of, you know. Moving on from the long-range plan, could you talk about when and how you decided to become a physicist?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. So I had no interest in physics as a child, certainly not in high school. My parents and my guidance counselor signed me up for physics over my strong objections. And I sat in the back row with a terrible attitude. It was very quite funny. But until we got to the started talking about modern physics, and I was so fascinated by this that when I went on to undergrad, I took some more physics. And I ended up getting sucked into a physics major by the fantastic department at the State University of New York at Geneseo. And then my undergraduate research experiences there really cemented my interest and set my path forward.
Your undergraduate research experiences, did you start out in nuclear astrophysics theory kind of stuff, or?
No. I started out in experimental nuclear physics because Geneseo had a small accelerator in the basement. And so I spent 3 years working on that accelerator, which was super fun, but also made me a theorist. And I became interested in graduate school. And
yeah, I definitely hear about people moving around a lot. And that's definitely something good to know is available. You know, you're not stuck in your first.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I encourage undergraduates to take advantage of multiple research opportunities. In addition to working at Geneseo, I also spent a summer at Argonne National Lab working with the high energy physics group. So I got to be a part of a small detector or a large detector, I guess, on a major detector for RIC. And that was a really very different experience, which I really appreciated. And again, helped me decide that theory was the path for me.
Yeah. Beyond that, if you feel comfortable, could you talk about any obstacles that you had to overcome along the way?
Yeah. So I thought about this a bit. I've listened to a few of these podcasts, and I've noticed that in at least a few of the ones I've listened to, the response to this has been, oh, well, no, I haven't encountered too many obstacles, or I didn't really notice them. Yeah, so I'm really happy to hear that. I really hope that this is true. This has not really been true for me. And you know, I recognize it's hard to talk about obstacles without sounding, you know, bitter or like you're complaining. So, but still, I'm going to try, because I want to reach out to the students listening who may be encountering or will encounter similar difficulties. And I'd hate for them to think, oh, well, this is tough for me, but not for those who have been successful. So maybe this path is not right for me. Okay, so with that preface, I just want to mention a couple of different things. So when I first got to graduate school, I was one of very few women in my class. And the atmosphere was much more competitive than in my undergrad department, which was really, undergrad was very collegial. So I was pretty lonely and discouraged. I ended up leaving that institution and transferred to a different institution where I was greeted by an active women in physics group and a supportive and welcoming grad community. So I think those who might be struggling, you know, just keep looking, you will find your place. So another obstacle I encountered later in my career was likely due to my unusual career path. which I mentioned earlier. In nuclear theory, new PhDs can expect to hold like 2 to 4 postdoctoral positions before becoming competitive for a permanent academic position. And at the time, I really wasn't interested in moving around so much. So I chose instead to accept a position at a small college. So while I did a lot of teaching, luckily at Union College, they provided great support for research. And through some sabbaticals, some research leaves, and collaborations with university and national labs, I was able to build a research program. But this work took a little while to be accepted by the community. And I don't know if it, you know, is because of my unusual path. For example, one of our key innovations was to examine how individual pieces of nuclear data influence our process nucleosynthesis. So the most of the impactful nuclei that we identified had not been studied in the laboratory, and in fact, were just outside of the experimental reach at the time. We showed how the measurements could pushing into those regions could help refine predictions of our process observables and help us to constrain the R process site. But it was really challenging to get these studies published and through peer review. So we struggled for a long time with this. But happily, by now, the studies have made their way into the literature and have motivated and continue to motivate experimental campaigns worldwide. And my one last comment is more personal. So I'm also a single mother. That's challenging because an academic career in physics involves long hours, you know, often outside the regular 9 to 5 when you have childcare. It also requires a lot of travel, national and international travel, to conferences, workshops, invited talks, et cetera. These obligations are challenging to everybody, but particularly when you're a primary caregiver. So I couldn't have done this on my own. I relied on my generous support from my family, particularly my mother and my 3 sisters. They provided emotional support for me and hours of loving care for my daughter.
That's all really inspiring. It's a lot to, yeah, it's a lot to break up, but yeah, there's a few follow-up questions.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess you might say that in terms of going to grad school and the environment and stuff, maybe what recommendations could you make for students looking at grad schools to maybe help them prevent that?
Yeah, so look for what the environment is like. When you go and visit, talk to the grad students. What are they like? Do you want to hang out with them? Are they fun? What kind of community is there for you? What kind of resources? So these are important questions I didn't think to ask when I was looking at grad schools. I was just all focused on research and what kind of opportunities were available there. I didn't really think about what it was going to be like to live, because when you're in grad school, you're there for a long time. That's 5, 6 years. So you want to make sure that it's a good environment for you and you can be productive and work to use.
Yeah, that's definitely good information. I was very lucky. I told myself I didn't have time for the grad school visits and didn't visit anything and said, MSU sounds really good. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Said, you didn't even visit anyone.
We had like a virtual visit because, you know, COVID was going on. But I said, MSU sounds good. And luckily it worked out really well. But
yeah that's
and,
great.
Beyond that, let's see, the working at a smaller university, definitely that's something interesting. You don't hear that about that a lot in, you know, people who go into larger research institutions.
It's a path that I did not feel like I had any guidance to follow, because normally when you choose to go into a small college, that's, you know, that's your choice and you stay there the rest of your career. But that turned out to be not really what I was interested in, because I was so interested in these research questions and really interested in the promise of EFRIB, and wanted to be involved with making the most out of that for nuclear astrophysics. So I'm really excited to be able to be where I am and to figure out what EFRIB is going to tell us about the universe.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I don't know, I almost wish that was a more common path, because like you said, you weren't interested in moving around and all that. And that's what I've thought about in my own life, is I'm going to have to move every 2 years for a few years. You know,
I know. And some people welcome this. They're very adventurous and they're looking forward to spending time in different parts of the country or different parts of the world. And, you know, I'm just not like that. So it happened to be a path that worked well for me, but it's not a common one for sure.
And that's good to know that it, you know, it can be done. You know, you're not stuck in one place.
Absolutely.
I guess we'll move on. There's a lot to think about that, and I'm sure there's a lot of follow-up questions and beyond research and physics and all your challenges. Could you talk about what you do to relax? You know, it sounds like there's a lot.
Relax? So. What do you mean? No, I do. My favorite things are to spend time with family and friends. That's like my favorite thing. I also enjoy reading obsessively and binging ridiculous and stupid TV shows. I also love to get outside. These days, I really enjoy hiking and kayaking with the absolutely adorable little dog that my daughter and I welcomed into our family during the pandemic. So that has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds really fun. What's your favorite book, if you could name one?
Oh, it's hard to name one, but so the one I've been thinking about a lot recently is The Three-Body Problem. Have you read that one?
I have not.
Oh, it's a very interesting science fiction by a Chinese author who imagines what contact with alien life will be like. I recommend it.
Wait, I do think I had heard of that.
Didn't
I
think there's actually three books, but yeah.
I think one of the other people I interviewed may have said that.
It makes an impression.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have to put that on my list.
I think you should.
Do you have a favorite? Yeah. What you said, ridiculous and stupid TV shows. What, do you have any examples?
Oh my gosh. I love Twin Peaks. I'm like absolutely obsessed.
Oh yeah. I guess the final question I can think of right now is just what advice do you have for students and young researchers beyond what you've already given?
Well, my final comment is that I understand an academic pathway is like really tough and can seem very intimidating, but there are more opportunities than may first appear and a lot of great people that you will meet and interact with along the way. So I'm not sure this counts as advice, but this has always been my thinking, is that I love physics. And even more, I love that I get to spend my time thinking about the details of how the universe works. I think that is amazing. And so all along, I've just told myself, I'm going to do physics for as long as I can and just see what happens. And so I encourage everybody to do the same.
Thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate you sharing about yourself and your research. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. This podcast was created by Brian Stanley and Professor Huihuan Lin. Season 3 was interviewed by Bill Good and edited by Vara Lee Sikorkar. Thanks for listening.